Harry O.
The Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast with two siblings who love books.
Ben and I are in a competition to see who loves books more.
Yes, we are attempting to defeat each other in this competition. I'm attempting to read. It's the Try Books competition.
Yeah, the Try Books.
Try with a Y, folks, come on.
You made that pun earlier and it wasn't funny earlier.
I thought it repurposed nicely for books that works better than wizards.
Slightly. I will admit that Ben did beat me at Goblet of Fire, but I will not concede defeat yet.
It's okay. I'm not a professional punter. I still have my amateur status. You can tell. There's no joke there. I'm just saying that, so stop staring.
I basically just hate everything. Like, if we were in the Harry Potter universe, you would be Harry and I would be Snape, and I would just hate you all the time. I was actually thinking earlier today that if we were in the Harry Potter universe, you would be Ron and I would be Ginny, and Scott would be Harry.
That's kind of weird.
I know, like, doesn't really fit, but just, like, by virtue of being your sister.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway.
Any hoozle.
So, this week, we read Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire by J.K. Rowling.
Yes, we did.
Part of our Harry Potter cast extravaganza.
Harry Potter cast! Woo!
Which is a pun that I actually do really, really enjoy.
I know, you've taken a shine to that
so
one.
So, you don't fail at everything, Ben.
That means in 50-odd episodes of podcasting, I've made exactly one pun that you liked.
Sounds about right. Keep going, little try.
I'll keep trying. That hit rate's got to go up sooner or later.
This week is special because we have a guest.
Yeah.
Hi, guest.
Hello.
Saeed Khan, who was our one of our guests on the Jurassic Park episode.
He was a panelist. We had a panel for Jurassic Park.
Officially count as a panel since we had two people.
It was a four-person panel. It just happens that two of them were the hosts.
You might have missed me because I didn't talk much during that one. But
that's true. Not until towards the end, I think.
Yeah. So we're going to make him do most of the episode today.
That's right. So
Ben and I are actually just going to walk out of the room. So Saeed, why don't you give us a summary of... Okay.
So, I was going to say, at some point, if you hear the sound of the door opening, then closing, then expect to hear a lot of Saeed.
Obviously, I'm just going to skip that shit. So what's our plot synopsis for this week?
The shit in question being skipped, I think, is stuff like, who's the protagonist?
What's the genre? Where's the setting?
Just making sure.
Fuck that stuff.
I think we all know by now.
I was typing it out like, God, people know this crap.
Our plot synopsis for this book was, it's a trap!
Because the Try Wizard Tournament is, in fact, a giant trap.
The whole book is a trap, essentially.
Yeah. A really elaborate trap.
I guess if you didn't like the book, you could say it was a different kind of trap. I don't know.
Like, making you read a bad book?
Yeah, it was a waste of your time. I don't know.
No.
I don't know.
We do have a friend. I was telling Ben, I discussed the Goblet of Fire with him, and this was actually a while ago, probably a year or two ago, and he was ranting about how much he fucking hated book four. I was like, what's the deal, man? I thought book four was pretty good. And he said that he hates stories where the plot is some elaborate plot on the villain's end to try and ensnare the hero. So, you know, these 10 things have to happen perfectly so I can lure them into this situation so I can finally have my triumph, which is essentially what happens in the Goblet of Fire.
That is true.
And he was like, why didn't he just have Mad-Eye hand him a portkey, like, in the middle of the school year? Does he really have to go through the entire Triwizard Tournament?
Oh, Harry, I dropped my pencil. Could you grab it for me?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Whoop. Transported.
Voldemort.
Voldemort. And if he had been transported before the time he was, he might not have known enough stuff to, like, survive. maybe?
Expelliarmus. That's about
it. He knew Expelliarmus already.
It's a good thing he knew Expelliarmus.
He learned that in book two. It's the one useful thing Lockhart ever did, I guess.
That's true.
So, I guess, on to the book.
All right, let's do it.
Let's do this! So who are our new characters this time around?
Well, you just mentioned Moody, so why not Mad-Eye Moody?
Yeah, so the interesting thing about Mad-Eye Moody's character is that he is Mad-Eye, but he's also Barty Crouch Jr. using Polyjuice Potion.
Yes. But he's a really accurate Mad-Eye Moody when he's being Mad-Eye Moody.
Yeah, we know enough about Mad-Eye that apparently everything that Crouch does as him is basically the way he would have acted anyway.
Yeah, somebody did their research before they took the Polyjuice
potion. It's pretty impressive, really.
Yeah, yeah, if you think about, Sai, like you were saying, the first three books, how Dumbledore always seems to know exactly what's going on all the time. And so if you go into book four with that impression of Dumbledore, and then you realize that he didn't know that it wasn't the real Mad-Eye until the very end of the school year, then that guy did a pretty impressive cover-up job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Bart Jr. clearly missed his calling as an actor.
Yeah.
Instead choosing to be a, mass murdering fuckhead.
Yeah.
Or at least a supporter of one.
Instead choosing to be a giant doucher. Maybe he should have been a teacher.
Yeah.
Because we were saying that he actually does a good job teaching the students.
Yeah, I mean, Mad-Eye comes across as actually surprisingly lucid, just a bit paranoid.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, you know, what's a little paranoia among friends, right?
Well, I mean, considering the fact that he used to be a dark wizard hunter,
right,
essentially.
An auror.
Then.
Yeah.
That makes sense that he's paranoid.
Right. I get it. You see, you fought the greatest evil wizarding has seen for, I don't know, hundreds of years, possibly? And you tend to jump at shadows a little bit. Well, dark magic is unpleasant. It'll make you do that.
I think it sounds great.
Dark magic?
Yeah. The Imperious Curse is my favorite.
I don't know. I could probably find uses for dark magic, but, you know, I've always been a little gray myself.
Ben wants to be a Slytherin.
I'm not entirely opposed to it.
I'm not either. If the Slytherins were less of, like, total douchebags, right, I would probably want to be a Slytherin.
Can I scheme but not be a dick to everybody? Like, is that allowed?
Can I not ally myself with Draco Malfoy?
Right.
Who's the most obnoxious person in the book, aside from Snape, who's also a Slytherin?
Although I do have a feeling that a lot of Slytherins don't like Draco Malfoy. I mean, come on, he's a dick all the time.
All the time!
Right.
Constantly!
Yeah, even the ones who are inclined to align with his sorts of causes and beliefs have got to be like, God, that kid is so annoying! He'll never shut up about the fucking muggle thing.
Yeah, you always see him with this group of cronies, but I wonder if everyone else just looks at him like, that kid is a douche.
The Slytherin house has got to be divided into two, like, the people who think he's annoying and the people who look up to him for some weird reason.
Because his dad's rich?
I guess. Malfoy, have a butterbeer, chill the fuck out.
People should just be hexing him left and right.
He probably doesn't even like butterbeer. That's how big of a douche he is.
He's enough of an asshole he doesn't like butterbeer. Butterbeer's fucking delicious.
It's delicious and it makes me feel warm and relaxed. He's like, I don't really care for it. He'd be that guy. He's like, you know what? You don't get to come with us next time.
He'd be the guy that you handed a pound of Honey Duke's chocolate. He'd be, no thanks, not really my thing. Yeah. Because I instantly distrust people who don't like chocolate.
That's right. Just like a Slytherin.
What's wrong with you? Maybe the Slytherin house is constantly hexing and torturing him while he's in the common room, because they all hate him so much. And so he's taking it all on Harry, because he's so sad that everyone hates him.
That's why he wanders the halls the rest of the time, being a dick to people in the other house.
That's really, it's Draco's secret pain.
Yeah. It's that his own house doesn't like him. Once again, this is turning into Draco Malfoy talk.
Draco Malfoy podcast.
Draco Malfoy talk. Welcome back for another episode. So would you say Draco is awesome or super awesome?
I was thinking this is more of the Draco Malfoy is the world's biggest tool podcast.
Well, yeah, it's more the other way around.
He's hard to not talk about because he's so annoying.
That's true.
We are also talking about Snape in the same vein as Draco, as being just over-the-top dick.
Yeah. His personality is cartoonish. His motivations are complex, as we talked about way back in the first book, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But he sure doesn't show any of that complexity in class. It's just straight up, I don't like you, so yep. I'm going to be a fuckhead.
Yeah. Like, blatant favoritism for the Slytherins for no reason.
He is not very subtle at all.
No.
Which is weird, because he's apparently super subtle also at the same time.
Yeah. Exactly.
How does he manage that?
He's not as... Maybe he's just a less good actor than Barty Crouch Jr.
Yeah. So, what's the big reveal about Snape in this book is that he was a Death Eater.
Yes.
I guess we should mention what Death Eaters are.
Yeah, Death Eater is, well, basically Voldemort's inner circle. Not everyone who aligned with him, but definitely his... Kind of like his own SS or something.
Yeah. Continuing the Hitler
presence. Yeah, well, it's hard to avoid them with Voldemort, I think. If you're a mass murdering racist who puts his tendrils into the government and tries to make it state policy, it's pretty hard not to compare you to Hitler. That's all I'm saying. Pay heed, internet.
She should have given him a mustache.
Yeah.
Imagine Voldemort with a mustache. That'd be hilarious.
Like a snake face and a little mustache.
Mustache. Other hair on his body. Just a tiny little mustache.
That is weird. Well, then he'd be a lot less scary that way.
He's like, dude, what?
Or he'd be a different kind of scary. He'd be like pedo Voldemort or something. This is like a pale, hairless body with a snakeish face and a weird creeper stash, like clinging to his upper lip.
Ugh. He magics one on because he wants hair so bad. Voldemort's secret pain.
And it's a terrible mustache. It's like a 14-year-old's mustache.
It's like Harry's mustache. But was it shave or did they just magic their facial hair off?
I'm sure they magic their facial hair off.
They never mention it.
If you handed a wizard a razor, I'm pretty sure they would bleed to death within the next 10 minutes.
Accidentally kill themselves.
How does this thing work? Ah!
How do muggles do this? It's crazy.
You're such an idiot.
God damn, wizards are dumb.
That's actually what happened in the final scene. Wormtail was trying to just shave a little hair into the cauldron, and he slipped and cut his alarm off. How does this muggle blade... Ah!
I've got my hand!
Voldemort's like, good enough. Ah! Rises up.
Does any of this have anything to do with the plot of the book?
Well, no. Actually, we were technically talking about Mad-Eye Moody, I think. But not for about the last 7 minutes or so.
We were talking about the Death Eaters, right? And they are all marked with a magical...
A dark mark.
Dark tattoo.
Mark. A skull with a serpent coming out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I was saying that Snape... We find out that Snape was a Death Eater. Was/is. Although Dumbledore says that he's working for the good side now, but he doesn't say why.
Yeah, and that he turned before Voldemort was defeated the first time,
yeah.
Which makes definitely, if that's true, that definitely makes him more trustworthy than if he's like, no, but this time I'm not, guys.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Right?
And we don't really know why Dumbledore trusts Snape, and I would say Harry and his friends have a fairly good reason to not really trust him. If I was Harry, I would not trust Snape either, so.
Yeah, definitely not.
That does bring up questions about his character.
Mm-hmm. So, to maybe finish up our thoughts on Barty Crouch. Maybe both of the Crouches, actually.
Crouch Jr. and Sr.
Yeah, so Jr. was masquerading as Mad-Eye Moody, was really good at it. Turns out just to pretty much be a total evil minion type when all is said and done. The one with superb acting skills.
You should have seen his Hamlet.
Yeah, I was about to make a Shakespeare joke. All British actors apparently perform Shakespeare.
His father was a ministry official who had a reputation for being an perhaps overzealous hunter of dark wizards.
Uh-huh.
It sounds like after Voldemort was gone, they had kind of a Red Scare with dark wizards.
Uh-huh.
Except that they were actually imprisoning some people who deserved it, at least.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
And his own son was one of those people, and until the reveal at the end that Moody was actually Barty Crouch Jr. all along, we weren't sure if that was fair or if it was based on rumor, because a lot of people are in prison due to rumor, and then he supposedly died in prison, but no, turns out he actually was right to imprison his son. His mistake was getting all soft and going with his wife and letting him be released.
Letting him get out.
Love.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that scene where he is convicted is pretty brutal.
Yeah.
Because Crouch is just like, you're no son of mine! Like, one of those disowning scenes.
Yep.
Shit, that's pretty rough. And he's, you know, crying and begging, and his mom's freaking out.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you find out that if Crouch had stuck to his guns and forced his son to stay in prison, and he had died there, that a fairly big chunk of Book 4 never would have been able to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say almost all of it, but I don't think they got to Hogwarts until about page 300 or so.
Quidditch, Ben.
Quidditch is important.
Very.
I was going to remark later in the episode, I guess, but I'll throw it in, but that she managed to cut Quidditch out of the book, except that's not true. She's cut student Quidditch out of the book.
I wonder if she's like, well, I'll give him one good Quidditch match at the beginning, since I'm not going to write about it for the rest of the book.
There you go.
I think around Book 4 is where you start seeing her Quidditch fatigue, though.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure there's a quote by her somewhere out there saying that in the later books, she kept trying to come up with reasons for Harry not to play Quidditch, so she didn't have to write any more scenes. She's like, fuck this stuff.
I've had enough Quidditch.
And everyone loves it!
Yeah, they do, despite its silly broken rules. Anyway, let's not get hung up on that.
Discuss that. More characters!
Sure, how about the contestants in the Tri-Wizard tournament?
Tri-Quad-Wizard.
The Quad-Tri-Wizard tournament.
So we have Victor Krum.
Yeah, he flies real well.
Bulgarian?
He's Bulgarian. He says, V... instead of W.
He does say he does say his W's as V's. He seems to be a fairly nice, if somewhat awkward, kid.
Yeah, I would say the main takeaway with Krum is, because he goes to Durmstrang, which is, you know, supposedly the bad school.
Stress Storm.
Yeah. Durmstrang. Stress Storm. Because they learn, I guess, how to use dark arts as opposed to just defense against the dark arts.
Right.
And it turns out that his headmaster is a Death Eater, or former Death Eater.
Yeah, I think he is the one who Voldemort is planning to hunt down and make very, very miserable later, in fact.
Yeah. He doesn't return because he put a bunch of them in prison, so.
Yeah.
Trying to save himself. So, yeah, he goes to the bad wizard school. People kind of suspect him throughout. But at the end, he ends up being a decent guy.
Yeah. Had a little crush on Hermione.
Yeah, which is an awesome person to have a crush on.
Yeah.
Go Victor.
Good choice, Victor.
I'm totally okay with that. I would have a crush on Hermione.
Fair enough.
She's awesome. I couldn't date her, though. She's too emotional, but...
Fair enough.
Like a woman. Nah, I'm kidding.
You could compare big hair and teeth.
We both do have big hair and big teeth. I probably have bigger teeth than Hermione.
Could be a contest.
No.
Nick and Ron could be like, you're both girls.
I don't know who I like more. But I can't do magic, so.
Well, that is a point.
I could just shoot her with a gun.
That's a point against you. Just introduce muggle brawling.
Slap, yeah, I could probably take her in a fist fight.
Slap people across the face. See, that's the thing that people are missing. Not to harp on Draco some more, but Hermione slaps him across the face at some point.
Yeah, in book three.
Yeah, he needs a little bit more of that.
Getting slapped around.
People didn't go straight to the jinxes and hexes. Like, bruh, I'm Draco. Bam! But I'm Draco. Bam! I said I'm slap! Runs away crying.
Punch him in the face once a week. Put him in his place.
Stay down. Every time you hex me, I'm going to punch you in the face. Unfair trade. Depending on the hex, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, so our other foreign champion is Fleur Delacour.
Yeah, she's kind of an archetype, really. She's the snooty pretty girl.
She is a snooty pretty girl. Part Vila.
Mm-hmm.
From yes. Beauxbatons.
A magical creature, which apparently can crossbreed with humans. Though that's not the most improbable.
Not the most improbable.
Crossbreeding in this book.
I just find it interesting that, you know, the Vila are beautiful, enchanting creatures, but when they drop their charms, they're ugly. But it seems like when a human mixes with a Vila, their offspring are just really good looking. They don't have any of that.
Yeah.
Underlying.
And it was her grandmother, so maybe being removed by the extra generation helps with that. Yeah. I mean, I don't know, maybe her.
Maybe her mom is a weird scaly bird.
Yeah. That attracted maybe a human mate. Quite improbably. and she gets a little. She loosens up a little bit by the end, mainly because Harry saves her little sister, Gabrielle. Excellent name. During the second challenge. But that's
about it for Fleur.
Yeah, I was going to say. And then Cedric Diggory, who along with Harry was chosen from Hogwarts, though I guess Harry was entered under a different school's name.
Cedric is the authentic Hogwarts champion.
The legal one of the correct age who actually entered the way he was supposed to.
Yeah.
And he's a Hufflepuff.
Yeah!
Yeah!
I think Cedric is a great example of why people should stop bagging on Hufflepuffs.
Yeah, it's not like they're just a bunch of
dumb idiots.
Dumb, friendly people. I'm happy because I'm a Hufflepuff, but everything is terrible. I don't care!
Yeah, their main trait, and I mean, I guess people make fun of them because when you're talking about the founders taking in people of certain traits, Hufflepuff always just takes the rest of them, or I'll take all of them.
That's right.
So it sounds like I'm taking the rejects.
It kind of does come across
the
way.
I think the main trait of Hufflepuffs is supposed to be, like, loyalty.
Although they did talk about it in the Sorting Hat song this time around, that they're the hardworking ones.
That's true.
Oh, yeah, it did say that. That they work hard.
She specified something, a trait.
And if Cedric personifies House Hufflepuff, then they're pretty good. They're pretty good folks.
Yeah, he's a good guy. He's the only one who doesn't treat Harry like shit, basically. Mm-hmm.
He accepts people.
Yep.
He's smart. He's courageous.
Yep.
Both in the tournament and I guess you could even say going into the ball, he asks. He managed to ask out Cho Chang.
Yeah, before Harry does. Courageous in another way.
That's right. Okay, for teenagers, that would almost be harder than facing a dragon.
Well, and he's entirely capable of magic, as proven.
Yep.
And he's good at finding things. I read an article the other day that actually said J.K. Rowling's daughter said a couple years ago, why doesn't everyone want to be a Hufflepuff? And she was so proud because Hufflepuff is her favorite house. And she was glad that her daughter figured it out. Because she said, you know, they're the ones who accept everybody and try hard.
Yeah, and...
Why wouldn't you want to be a Hufflepuff?
And the qualities they list for the other houses, I mean, we meet enough characters from the different houses over the course of the series. At this point in the series, maybe, arguably, not, because I don't think we've really met a Ravenclaw other than saying that Cho Chang is pretty.
Yeah.
But there are enough people of different personality types in each house that it's not like one house has a monopoly on a given trait.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you can be a Hufflepuff and still be courageous and still be smart.
Yeah.
And presumably even still be cunning. It's just you would also be loyal and you would accept people.
Yeah. So you'd be like all the good parts of the Slytherin without...
Right.
Yeah, and you can be obviously be a Gryffindor and still be smart because... Hermione is a Gryffindor, and it goes on and on, so...
Right.
So that was our PSA for Hufflepuffs.
That's right, and poor Cedric ends up dead for being in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Poor guy.
Yeah, I would say... I was thinking about it, and I think Cedric's really the first casualty we see in the books... Aside from Quirrell in book one, which doesn't really count because we just kind of hear about it in passing later.
Yeah, it was kind of a weird circumstance. Plus, when the shit got real, Harry passed out and just woke up later and had it explained to him.
But in book four, we actually just see Cedric straight up get killed.
Yeah, immediately.
And he's... We knew him first, and we know he's a good guy. Right. Quirrell, who... was sharing his soul with Voldemort, which is not very cool.
Right. It was Ray's curtain, final scene, dead.
Yeah.
Oh.
I was surprised by the lack of pomp and circumstance with his death. He shows up dead.
Yeah, I mean, it's really quite opposite of the entire book basically being an elaborate ruse to pull Harry into this other space.
Mm-hmm.
And then... to dispose of the other person instead of putting them through a year-long wizard tournament. You just say, dispose of the spare.
Kill the spare.
Kill the spare. And he was gone.
Poor Cedric.
Poor Cedric. And Harry goes very, I guess Cedric's reflection or whatever asked him to. So he goes kind of Marine Corps and pulls the body out of the combat zone. Leave no one behind!
Yeah, no man gets left behind. He totally does.
That's right. We mentioned Karkaroff, Maxime. Madame Maxime is the teacher, the headmaster at Beauxbatons. She's half giant.
Pretty Sticks, as like, Ben calls
Pretty
it.
Sticks, yes. She's half giant like Hagrid is, and they kind of like each other, but she seems to be having trouble coming to terms with her giant background.
Well, that's the reveal in this book, is that Hagrid is a half giant, and presumably Madame Maxime is also a half giant.
Yeah, I guess she doesn't say it, but it seems pretty likely. So yeah, it turns out Hagrid being 12 feet tall and like 6 feet wide is... not just him being a big guy. I would hope anyone reading the series for the first time would think that there was probably something magical about him or different.
I do like when that gets revealed and Harry and Hermione are like, yeah? And Ron's going, no, you guys, you don't understand. All the wizards thought he couldn't be half giant because giants are bad. And all the Muggle-born kids are like, I just kind of assumed he was part of giant.
You wizards and your damn racism.
Yeah, so that brings up one of the issues. The wizard racism we talked about extensively in book two comes back in full force for book four, although not against the human Muggle-born students, but rather the half-human or the non-human magical creatures.
Yeah, I mean, Hagrid is immediately seen as suspicious by some people when they find out he's half-giant, because giants are supposedly just these violent, almost mindless creatures, it sounds like.
Inheriting his mother's horrible qualities.
Yeah, and then house elves are definitely looked upon as servants, whatever their actual desires are.
Yeah, they essentially are slaves, as Hermione points out, since none of them get paid, and they just work for people.
But they seem to like being slaves, which is weird.
Yeah, and I think a good example of how house elves are treated is when Crouch orders Winky, his house elf, to stay in her tent and not leave. And then she runs off for reasons that are explained later and ends up getting fired for it.
Right.
And a lot of the other wizards go, well, she didn't listen to what he said, so she deserves to be fired. And Hermione's thinking, even if her life is in danger, she can't disobey these rules? That doesn't seem fair, which is legitimate.
Yeah, I had a problem with that. There's definitely, like, a line somewhere with the house elves. Like, if you treat them that badly, that's not a good thing. And there's some of when, I guess mostly Ron, when Hermione is trying to talk up her house elf cause, it's mostly Ron who's arguing with her, and he's using some of the rhetoric that people have used to defend slavery in the real world. And, oh, you know, they don't mind. They like it. They like having work to do. They're taken care of this way. And it always rings hollow with people. The thing with house elves is maybe they do like it. Maybe they do like it. And, like, as long as you're just letting them do chores and you're not actually abusing them or like something.
The Malfoys were Dobby.
Right.
Yeah. Although, so, yeah, and I was going to say, on the other hand, you know, they're not allowed to hold wands, which seems kind of messed up, because they're in a magical world. But at the same time, we've seen that house elves can perform all sorts of magic without having a wand. So do they really even need a wand? Is that an injustice, that they don't get them?
I don't know. Maybe you need a wand to do certain types of magic? I don't know enough about how the system works.
Yeah, but we've seen that their types of magic is, in some cases, even more powerful when Dobby's able to stop Lucius Malfoy in Book 2. And
true.
He doesn't even fight back.
Gives him a big air punch.
Yeah.
That was pretty awesome.
And then Winky is pretty much destroyed by being released.
Uh-huh.
And doesn't seem to be getting any better as time passes. So maybe having an attachment to a family or something, even though Dumbledore gives her a place, she still isn't satisfied. So she clearly felt some sort of connection to the Crouches, even though they definitely were not a family that was especially nice to her.
It seems that no matter how well they're treated, there's always a servant-master relationship.
Right.
You keep your master's secrets. You can't tell anybody else what's going on. So there's something going on there, but how messed up it is, we don't really know. We don't know enough about house elf politics at this point to really say.
That's true. I tend to lean towards Hermione's side of the argument myself.
Yeah, well, and what was the thing we were talking about earlier is, are house elves made to work and like it, or have they all been brainwashed into thinking that that's what they need to do?
Right.
What I find interesting is Hagrid being the half-giant when Hermione brings it up with him. He's like, I don't support this because that's what they like doing. So, like, the half-giant obviously is okay with the house elves being servants, but
yeah, and, I mean, that particular argument, it does seem to be that's what they like doing. I mean, they're magical creatures, for all I know. The first house elf was actually created by a wizard at some point in the past. And that is literally their purpose, for all we know. But I still say, pay him 1 galleon a week and give him 1 day off a month.
Like Dobby.
He was quite pleased with that arrangement.
He was. That seems fair enough.
He had to argue his way down to that. He was going to get weekends off initially. That was crazy.
That's because Dumbledore's a freak.
I know, that Dumbledore. He just doesn't understand.
That goddamn Dumbledore.
One of our big new characters in this book is, you know, as long as we're on the subject, is Rita Skeeter.
Yeah, the worst journalist in the world.
She is a professional liar.
She's essentially a tabloid writer.
Yeah, she really is. I mean, the grain of truth at the center of her stories is that, like, she writes a story about Harry Potter, then the grain of truth is that she talked to Harry Potter at one point.
And she asked him what he thought about his parents, or what his parents would have thought about him competing in the cup.
Right.
But his response was,
yeah. Right. So none of the responses or content of the conversation was actually reported. I don't know if she made things up or if she had just enchanted her pen to make things up for her.
I was wondering about that quick quote squill. Do those things always just write blatant lies?
I don't know.
Because it seems like a handy thing to have if you are a reporter, to have a quill that takes dictation for you so you don't have to write while you talk.
Yeah, and maybe if it even went and corrected your grammar a little along the way.
That would be nice.
Yeah. But if it just writes down a crock of shit.
Yeah. All right, Gabs. So, how have you been enjoying your podcasting experience so far?
It's good.
And the pen is like, Gabs Roman raves about podcast performance. We're huge. We're in 10 million homes now, she says. Soon, we'll be broadcasting from the moon.
That sounds like something Rita Skeeter would literally write.
Though she prefers to skew negative, it seems.
Yeah. We're going bankrupt. We're going to have to sell our house to fund the podcast.
Yeah. I mean, a couple of the stories are more, I don't know, like almost a human interest type of story where it's just a little overwrought. And then as the book progresses, she's clearly on a campaign of misinformation and trying to make Harry's life miserable.
Yeah.
And succeeding for the most part.
Yeah. With the help of the Slytherins, once again.
Not surprisingly.
The help of Draco Malfoy, the 80s bully douchebag.
That's right.
So we already touched on racism, but there are a couple more issues we bring up. I actually wanted to touch on feminism, which we haven't really done up until this point. But in this book, it did kind of stick out to me that of the four champions, only one of them is a girl. She's the least well-fleshed out of all of them. Because Cedric and Crumb both get multiple scenes where they talk about things, and she mostly just shows up to be French. She's the only one who fucks up the mermaid challenge and can't get to her person on time. And then she apparently also sucks at the maze, although I think that part wasn't necessarily her fault.
Yeah.
But I was like, okay, so one of four is a girl, and then she sucks the most at it.
Yeah.
That's nice.
But she might be the hottest of the four.
Yeah.
She's definitely the hottest of the four.
So she has that going for her, which is nice.
And it annoyed me, because I started thinking about it, and up until this point, I mean, we have Hermione and Professor McGonagall, so we have some good examples of female characters, but a lot of the major players do seem to be men. That if all the Defense Against the Dark Arts teachers so far have been men.
Yes.
And then a lot of the reveals at the end seem to focus around that. So, like, I was thinking at the end of book three, the whole confrontation is between Lupin, Sirius, and Snape.
Right.
And there are no adult women involved. You know, we just hear about Lily, but she never actually shows up.
Right.
And then at the end of book four, it's all about Voldemort and his, it sounds like, entirely male Death Eaters.
Just about.
And the Barty Crouches, who, again, are all men.
Yep. Yeah, so I guess counting up all the male characters would take a while.
Yeah, there are a lot of characters.
Kind of the women wouldn't take that long. It's like a woman gets sprinkled in each grouping of characters.
Uh-huh.
So with the, you know, I guess with the adults, with the teachers, you have McGonagall, and I guess you have Trelawney, but she's kind of
a Sprout.
And Sprout, yeah. So they're there. I mean, they're present. But you have McGonagall as a strong character.
Yeah.
But then you have Snape and Dumbledore and the various dark arts teachers as pretty strong counterpoints to that. With the parents, you have Mrs. Weasley,
uh-huh,
who is very strong-willed. And again, like, kind of awesome in her way, even if at this point in the series it's mostly a mom sort awesome of way. Mom way. Yeah, exactly. And then you have Hermione to keep Harry and Ron from testosterone-ing everything up.
Yeah. Hmm. We have some other female students, but again, like, Ginny hasn't really done anything.
Mm-hmm.
Parvati's main role is to go...
To be Indian?
To the Yule. Yeah, to go to the Yule Ball with Harry.
Right.
Lavender Brown's role is to giggle at things.
Yes.
So, I don't know. I feel like... I don't want to say she's bad at female characters, because she has good ones, but... There are significantly more male,
yeah.
strong male characters.
Though as we talk about it, it doesn't seem quite as huge an imbalance, but definitely the tournament competitors was a big imbalance. And actually, just to pile on with that part of what you were saying earlier, in the water challenge, Fleur not only struggles with it, she basically fails at it because... He gets too emotional to keep going.
Yeah.
She becomes a hysterical woman.
Yeah.
No, my sister! It's like, this is a bad time to panic. Here's what you do when your sister is in trouble. You swim down and save her ass.
Come on! Yeah, if I was in the Triwizard Tournament, they'd put you down there, and I'd be like, God, I don't even care if you live. And I'd get there first and be like, fine.
It's fine, I guess I'll take it. I guess I'll haul him out of here. But it's going to take twice as long as getting down here. This is heavy.
Jeez.
I'd just be like, fat floats. I'll try to hold still.
I'd probably, like, do a, like, a floating charm. I'd Wingardium Leviosa you out.
Yeah, that's true. You'd go all Hermione on it. And no extra charms. Gav would just untie me and be like, start swimming.
Save yourself.
Okay.
Guess I am a Slytherin. Oh, no! And then the other thing we wanted to talk about was the moral fiber issue, as long as we're talking about saving people from the lake.
Yeah, we see that the instructors of the various academies do at least value that, except for Karkaroff, but...
Yeah.
Whatever. He's all bad and stuff. And he's, or, I don't know, maybe he's not...
He's a coward.
Yeah, he's definitely a coward. But they decided to award him... Everyone but Karkaroff decided to award him full points for the water challenge because he was late getting back to the surface, but he bothered to rescue everyone who was still down there.
Yeah.
And not just take his hostage and go.
Mm-hmm.
Which we also discussed earlier in the vein of, come on, Harry, you really think that if you didn't rescue that little girl that they were just going
to... Dumbledore's let her drown.
Dumbledore would just feed her to the merpeople? Right.
Come on.
use some common sense, Harry. But he can't help it. He just gets all riled up when he sees someone in trouble.
It's all Harry.
That's right.
It's that testosterone.
Yeah, he's testosterone-ing this situation up. He saw a damsel in distress.
Oh, God. I also did want to talk about, do you think it's kind of lame that Crumb and Cedric's people were Cho and Hermione? Like, that's really the most important person to you?
Yeah, that was kind of bad.
Because at first I thought, well, you know, they're at Hogwarts, easy access. But they bothered to go get Fleur's sister from France.
Yeah.
So couldn't they get, like... I don't know, Crumb's best friend from home and Cedric's dad or something, like...
A Hufflepuff would definitely have old friends or family members that they would be more attached to than someone they'd been dating for maybe, like, 3 or 5 months, maybe? Like, you will ball
the
to summer?
The was, like, in February.
Oh, it was right after. Yeah, someone you've been dating for, like, 6 weeks or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was kind of silly. Victor, I don't know, maybe it was just because he was a... teenager and he was having a crush, and so that was
a teenage Quidditch star.
Yeah, well, it was like he could impress her by rescuing her or something. Maybe that was part of it. Like, I can rationalize his Cedric. I have a lot of problems with.
and Ron being the person Harry has to save makes tons of sense.
Yes, it does.
Yeah,
Fleur's little sister makes tons of sense. Yeah. But yeah, then like the random girlfriends. doesn't make any sense.
Let's say, for that matter, when Harry got down there and was like, Ron and Hermione, aw, hell no.
Yeah. What's that about?
Like, either one of them could have made sense. He could have been like, sorry, I had to rescue them both. I thought they were both my hostages.
Yeah, like, who else?
Those are my best friends.
Although I do think the fact that they chose Ron for Harry does again demonstrate that Harry and Ron are best friends.
Yes, yes.
Which, I don't remember if I complained about that thoroughly enough about the movies on the podcast.
You haven't done that on the air yet, no.
Okay. The movies do a horrible job of showing that Harry and Ron are best friends, and the books do an awesome job at it. And that's that.
Yeah, and we will definitely let you brutalize the movies as long as you want to when we do our wrap-up at the end of all this.
Yeah, we'll do our roundtable. Worry about that later. Let's see. So, anything else we still need to discuss?
Let's see.
Oh, I guess as long as we're talking about mermaids in the lake, I did want to throw one more thing in there.
Yeah.
That I thought them not being able to find a charm for Harry to breathe underwater was fucking dumb. I was like, so Florin and Cedric both used, like, a bubble head charm. So it's obviously, at least mildly common, if they both thought of it, and Hermione didn't find that in a book somewhere?
Yeah.
Or she was thinking about human transfiguration, and I guess by that point they didn't have long enough for him to practice it.
Yeah.
But surely, you know, like the gillyweed or the bubblehead charm or something like that
would have showed up in an encyclopedia somewhere?
Yeah. Or like just in a standard spell book. And they seem to be reading the most obscure books that were as least little helpful as possible. It's like, you guys need the internet so bad.
Yeah, they need Wizard Google like
how
you would not believe.
Survive underwater.
Like, hold on, let me cast a research charm. Whee!
I just thought that was kind of ridiculous that they didn't find anything, and at the last minute, Dobby just had to shove the gillyweed into his hand.
Yeah.
So, but this was the mid-90s, right? So the internet wouldn't probably work as well anyway.
Well, this was 2000, I think.
Well, the book itself takes place in the mid-90s.
Yeah, oh, right. Yeah, I guess that's true. Not that the wizards would have any idea how to use the internet.
Yeah, if they can't figure anything else out.
Electricity.
Yeah. I feel like that's one muggle invention that the wizard kids would refuse to live without when they went to school.
Yeah, if you grew up in a muggle household and the 2000s and you went to Hogwarts and you're like, no Wi-Fi, bullshit. Yeah. I am not doing my potions homework without the internet.
That's right.
That is lame.
Oh man, yeah, this is a tough one. What goes in this potion again? I don't know, let's check the potion wiki.
Yeah, I was gonna say, instead of Wikipedia you could have Wizardpedia.
Totally. I will, without even getting on the internet to find out, I guarantee you there's a Wizardpedia.
Yeah, probably.
And there's a good chance that it's a Harry Potter wiki. I don't know if it's the Harry Potter wiki, but
yeah.
You know there are some of those out there.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, yes.
Do we want to talk about the cemetery scene at the end?
Yeah, why don't we talk about
a couple interesting things
that
in
a little
there.
Bit. Well, really, the end of the book in general, like the last 100 pages, give or take, were kind of awesome. Yeah, yeah. Fanboy. All right, but yeah, so he goes to the cemetery, and we mentioned that Cedric was disposed of immediately,
mm-hmm.
And then Harry is basically being used as part of a potion to help resurrect Voldemort's body.
Yeah.
But first, Wormtail fails to use a straight razor.
Cuts off his own hand.
No, actually, I think that was intentional.
Yeah, the med student over here. How did he do that without breaking the bone first?
I was wondering. I've seen a leg being amputated. It's not that easy to cut through bone.
Yeah, you don't do it with a swipe of the blade. That takes less than a second.
That's why we decided that the knife is probably charmed or something.
Yes, this is an enchanted knife of +9 sharpness or something.
Ugh.
But there's an infomercial somewhere in the Wizarding World.
Cut cuts through anything.
Ceremonial dagger cuts through anything.
And they're cutting through shoes and potatoes and then someone's arm.
As a sharpness charm. Like, just hold it out and someone levitates like a car on top of it and the car just splits clean down the middle.
Awesome.
Yeah, so you had this guy cutting his freaking hand off.
Which is pretty effed up.
And a kid, a 16-year-old.
14.
Cedric.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
A 16-year-old kid being murdered without remorse or hesitation.
Mm-hmm.
And then Harry being tortured at the hands of an evil mastermind.
Yep.
Pretty dark shit right there.
Yeah, the end of book four, we were talking about how, you know, book two is hints of darkness, and book three is all about, you know, overcoming fear,
mm-hmm.
and then book four is just straight up like, all right, here's the adult stuff.
Yep.
Have fun.
Evil is here. Kid time is over. And yeah, the end of this book, I think, is probably the turning point in the series.
I agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Voldemort gets his body back.
Yep.
It can only go to shit from here on out.
Yep.
Well, and we even mentioned that book three was the first non-Voldemort book.
Right.
And then book four is the most Voldemort book so far since he actually, you know, gets his body back. And
right, yeah.
So we're not going to have any more of those endings.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Voldemort is the plot from here to the
end. Yeah.
In some form or another.
Maybe he takes a hiatus for a couple of books after coming back. Who knows?
That's right. He decided to take a nice vacation, tan that pale skin a little bit.
I'll see him book seven, Harry.
Now that he's back to being fully Voldemort again. After all his years of being Voldaless. Voldenot?
Questionable.
I'm trying over here. I never claimed to be funny to anyone other than myself.
Okay. All right.
Fair enough.
But the most awesome thing, I guess, that happens at the graveyard is when we found out all the way back in book one that Harry's wand shares a core with Voldemort's wand. They both have a phoenix feather, tail feather, at the center of their wands. And that factoid comes into play here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so what happens when you use a wand against its sibling wand?
They apparently do freaky shit.
Yeah.
They connect and make golden cages and stuff.
They combine and become one.
And make you levitate into the air and start, I guess whoever has the most will.
Yeah.
Whoever fails their will save has their most recent spells start, reflections of their most recent spells start spitting out of their wand.
If Harry's would have reversed, it would have just been Expelliarmus for like the last 12 times, I feel like.
It's just been all these ghostly wands flying through the air.
He used Impedimenta against that spire. Let's be fair. A couple of Lumoses in there.
It would have been a well-lit golden cage. Yes, it's much more dramatic when you start spitting...
dead people out.
Yeah, spirits. Not really even spirits. Yes. Dumbledore was careful to define that.
Smoky reflections of...
Right.
Basically the essence of the person without actually being any consciousness.
Yeah, without truly being the person.
Yeah.
Though that being said, they did a pretty good impression of being people for a few seconds. Because Cedric pops out and says...
take me back to my parents.
Take my body back to my parents, yeah. And Harry's parents pop out and...
tell him that he's got some time.
Yeah.
To run.
Give him a little bit of advice and even are able to interfere enough with Voldemort to give Harry time to escape.
So I did want to mention something about that because Ben and I discovered an interesting thing. In my book, so all the bodies are coming out of the wand in backward order. And... after Frank Bryce, the muggle that Voldemort kills at the very beginning of the book, Harry's dad pops out of the wand and says, hold on for just a minute longer, your mom wants to see you, and then Lily pops out. And I went, wait, but we know that James sacrificed himself to save Lily and Harry, and then Lily sacrificed herself, which is why Voldemort couldn't touch him. So it should be Lily and then James. And Ben looked it up in his book, and in his version, Lily comes out of the wand first and says, "Hold on a minute, your father wants to see you."
Are they really different?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
I double-checked it in my book while I was reading it to make sure I wasn't projecting, because I'd always thought that was really weird. And it turns out it was a mistake that the editors changed for the paperback version.
Yeah, they caught it and fixed it for the trade paperback, it looks like.
Wow. That's a pretty big mistake to make.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, you would think that she goes, "Oh, they're coming out in reverse order. Obviously, Lily has to come out before James," but...
That'd be an easy mistake to make at the end of a 700-page book, though.
You think her editor would be like, "Wait a tick."
I guess. I mean, I don't know how you do continuity with a series like this. Maybe, I mean, that's... It is major, but it's not major in a way where if you were just reading through it and editing that, I think you would have to be like, "Hold on, isn't this backwards?"
Well, yeah, I did read that Gurm, for example, he has a couple of mega fans who act as continuity checkers for him.
Yeah.
So they read through drafts and then say, "Oh, that person's name's wrong, that blah 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 is wrong, that eye color is wrong," and the woman who writes the True Blood books, she also has a couple of super fans who are continuity checkers for her, because the authors just start forgetting shit, and they rely on the people who've read the books like 100 times
right.
So I wonder, J.K. Rowling just needed one of those, basically.
Yeah, well, I mean, at some point you're like, "Wait, was that in one of the books, or was that in a draft, or is that something I haven't written yet, or
something I thought about but didn't put in there?"
Right, or she's having stuff come out of the wand, and she's going, "Okay, he got Lily, and or no, he got James, and then he got Lily, and then has James come out of the wand before Lily comes out of the wand, and just, whoops, we're trying to go in reverse order here."
Yeah, yeah. So, I don't know how interesting people are going to find that tidbit, but I think it's interesting. let's see. Ben, you wanted to talk a little bit about Myrtle.
Mostly just in the sense of Harry should probably at least make an attempt to be nice to her. Because he totally just blows her off every time he sees her or has a conversation with her. It's like, "Yeah, that's great, Myrtle. Okay, yeah. Oh, sorry, I haven't been to see you. I haven't been to see you." You're trailing off again, Harry. What's going on over there?
You're mumbling again.
Right, and she
helps him figure out the clue and points him in the right direction.
Yeah, like, totally. And I just think he owes her one, especially since we have established that wizards are supposed to feel a sense of debt.
That's true.
See?
Wormtail did a really bad job of feeling a sense of debt.
Yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, he did. And he's distracted by the bleeding stump where his hand used to be. Next time, get an electric razor. Good thing you didn't try to shave your face first.
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
So I just want to do a quick list of firsts for this book.
Do it.
So it's the first book without a villain fake-out. Unlike the first three. First book where you get introduced to the Pensieve, which is a really awesome way of introducing exposition without obviously just telling someone backstory.
Since we remarked on that last time.
Yeah. And it is the first book that hints at Ron and Hermione as a couple and at Harry and Hermione not becoming a couple.
Right.
Damn.
I'm kidding. Gaz is getting ready to throttle you there.
I mean, Harry straight up is like, "Why do people think Hermione would be my girlfriend? That's weird." And Ron and Hermione obviously have, especially with the Yule Ball, there is something going on there. Ron is definitely jealous.
Yeah, though he's too clueless to know that he's jealous.
He's a big dork about
it. I thought the whole Harry-Ron behavior surrounding the Yule Ball was pretty hilarious.
They were very 14.
They were. They're like, "Oh, boy," and Harry, like, putting off asking people for so long, and finally kind of making a mess of it, and then getting to the dance and just totally ignoring their dates.
Yeah.
"Hey, Harry, do you want to dance?" "No, not really." Okay.
Yeah, although apparently Parvati and Padma are hot enough shit that they just find other dudes to hang out with.
That's true. It would sound like a dance where everyone wanted to go because it was a thing that was unusual. And
yeah.
I suspect a lot of the couples at that dance were not really together.
It's kind of like wizard prom.
Yeah, it really was.
We're just like, I'll just ask a friend, whatever.
It's like, right. It's like, I'm gonna go, so I'm not dating anyone right now. Hey, what are you up to?
Kind of like Fred and Angelina.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Fred's like... See, Fred had the right approach, though. Harry and Ron should have taken note of his approach.
Yeah.
Hey, Angelina, you wanna go? Yeah, okay.
Cool. That easy.
Done, guys. Now, go find a date.
What?
And then Ron doing the, again, I've seen this in other things before, but Ron doing the, wait, you're a girl reaction.
To Hermione.
Which the girls never take well, no matter what the media is.
Hermione, you're a girl. Oh, well done, Ron.
You're pretty quick. You're a clever one, you are.
Ginny can go with Harry, and Hermione can go with me. And then later he'd be like, oh, Hermione!
Let's suck face.
Yeah, I was going to make a more sexual comment, but they're 14, so they're probably just thinking about making out right now.
Probably.
About snogging.
Yes, a word that comes up a lot in later volumes.
Yeah. So, yeah, just thought I'd bring that up. And also bringing it up, going, people who thought Harry and Hermione were going to get together, what is wrong with you?
I know, I have not seen a single hint of that as of this point in the series.
Like, even if you desperately wanted it to happen because you just thought they'd be good together and you don't like Ron or something, like, you can't just ignore the fact that that's not ever going to happen.
Right.
Like, man, I wish Harry and Hermione would get together, but... J.K. Rowling obviously does not want them to be.
That's clearly not their destiny.
She's way more of a sister figure to him than
girlfriend
figure. Because when Ron's pissed at him, she's the one that's like, okay, let's calm down and think about this.
Yeah. I sometimes feel like people who read books must not have siblings, so they just feel like everyone should hook up all the time.
Yeah.
And don't you recognize a brother-sister relationship when you see it?
Well, as we've remarked on in the past, there's a fair amount of sibling shipping happening out there in these fandoms.
Yeah, but people who apparently have siblings.
Well, that's not okay.
I did read a fan fiction once for fun that Bill and Charlie were dating, and Percy and Oliver Wood were dating, and Fred and George were dating, and Harry and Ron were dating, and Ginny and Hermione were dating. And I was like, I read the description, I was like, what the fuck? So I had to open it. Yeah. I was like, what is this nonsense?
What is this madness?
This is amazing. Apparently all the Weasleys have to be gay or something.
Yeah, right? And several of them with each other. Less...
Yeah,
interesting.
There's some twincest happening.
All right, so how about the quality of the writing?
Yes, stop me before I keep going. Mm-hmm. Good call. Well, it is definitely the longest book of the series thus far. I think the only book longer than book 4 is book 5.
So look for that next week.
Yeah. And it's the first book with... like we said, the scary adult stuff happening. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The end was very strong.
Yeah.
You know, and even though it's long, while I was reading it, I didn't think it was too long. Though I did notice it took them about 300 pages to finally get to Hogwarts. So there are probably some people who don't like that.
Yeah, that is something I noticed about book 4 as well, is it seems to take forever for them to get to Hogwarts.
Yeah.
And so there's probably something you can cut out from that first chunk that doesn't need to be there.
I would think so. And, I mean, these books are laid out, especially the longer ones, in a fair amount of detail. Like, there's... a chapter with something happening, and then the next chapter is the next week or couple weeks of time, and, like, she really lays out the whole school year chapter by chapter.
Yeah.
And so if you don't want that level of detail, I could see some people taking some issue with that. So, I mean, if the goal was to come up with a tight sub 400 page book every time. You could probably do that with this story.
Yeah.
By cutting a lot of those details, but you'd lose a lot of the characterization and universe building that I think are the two primary reasons that people tend to love this series.
That was actually exactly the comment that I was going to make, is this book probably could be 100 or 200 pages shorter, but the world building is such a big part of the books that you would miss so many small details about the Wizarding World that people freak out over.
Right.
That, you know, maybe in the end it's worth it to have those 200 pages there. So you can get all those small little bits and pieces.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly didn't resent having to read it, so. Any, let's see, questions that we are left with?
Yes. Ben, yours is the first one.
Oh, yeah. Will Hermione succeed in freeing the house elves? Will she finally convince everybody, including the house elves? That's a good idea.
Do Hermione and Crum continue to date? Are they going to carry on a long-term relationship?
Are they going to be pen pals?
Long distance?
Where?
So I think this was your question.
The next one's definitely his question.
Yeah.
The one after this one is definitely his question.
Oh, yeah. Where are Madame Maxime and Hagrid off to?
We don't know. We assume to maybe make contact with the giants, but...
Yeah. We don't really know.
We don't know for sure.
Here's my question. How do giants and normal-sized people have sex with each other? Hagrid's mom is a giant and his dad's just like a dude. How did they have sex?
Which, for the record, I do think is the way you would have to do it.
Yeah, we decided that a male giant having sex with a female human would kill her. Because if a giant's 20 feet tall, but then how does, like, a normal dude's penis work in a giant vagina?
Well, I can come up with a couple possibilities.
They're all disgusting.
They're all disgusting. The less disgusting one is that maybe Hagrid's mother had a human-sized vagina on her giant body.
hilarious.
I mean, it's known to happen in nature. So.
The more disgusting one is that maybe he just has to crawl all the way up inside there with his entire body. In order to have children, he has to take care of himself.
You know, something I just thought of was he could use the engorgement charm, engorgior, or whatever it
there
is,
you go.
On himself.
Oh, dang.
We forgot about magic.
We forgot the magical angles somehow.
That just occurred to me.
Magical angles and all that implies with sex life. Magical angles might be the title of this episode.
This is the first adult book of the series, we decided, so sex questions must be answered.
That's right.
And then what's going to go on with Voldemort in the next book? Because we know that the Minister of Magic already is denying he's back, so what's going to happen with that?
Yeah, seems like some nasty political seas are ahead.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Our verdict. I'll go first,
okay,
since no one's speaking up. My verdict is yay! I liked it. I think it was my favorite of the first four, certainly. I liked that extra length. I think the universe building is what appeals to me.
Saeed?
I liked it because shit got real. You suddenly go from hunky-dory Hogwarts to crazy, scary graveyard, and everything just changing in the matter of a couple of chapters. I like that.
Yeah, I really liked the graveyard scene, too. And I was surprised by how much I liked the book, because I seemed to recall it being one of my less favorite ones. I was telling Ben that I think I've reread it a lot less than the other books. But then I was really into it this time around. I don't know if I was just projecting bad things onto the book or what, but it's an entertaining read if you can get over the Triwizard Tournament being a plot to get Harry to Voldemort.
Right, right.
Which is fine with me.
So I don't suppose anyone here is managing to cram other reading in around trying to devour 7 books, several of which are rather hefty in a month.
Not me.
I'm not.
I'm just reading the next one.
Yeah, me too.
I think I might read Aaron Dugan's book, Benaja's Keeper.
Oh, uh-huh.
I've only got about 3 weeks left of break, so I'm going to try to squeeze in some reading.
Oh, yeah, I guess you probably don't have a lot of time for pleasure reading in med school. Uh-huh. Oh, boy. All right, well, if you want to comment or ask questions or just yell at us, then here are some ways you can do it. You can do it on our website, novelideaspodcast.com.
You can email us, novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
You can hit us on Twitter, @novelideaspod.
And you can find us on iTunes just by typing Novel Ideas into the search bar.
Yeah.
It looks like we maybe got one or two more ratings.
Woo-hoo!
But we're not really sure.
Yeah. So if you're listening on iTunes, rate, review, comment, do all that good stuff.
Et cetera, et cetera.
That's right. I should have asked this before we started recording. You don't have anything going on you want to plug, do you?
No.
All right. To our vast audience of literally dozens of listeners.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe dozen listeners.
And when I say literally, I mean 24 at most.
That's being generous.
Well, who knows? Anyway, next week, or next
time,
it may or may not take a week, will be the fifth book.
Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix.
Yeah, Harry Potter cast extravaganza.
Ooh.
Is that everything?
I think so.
I keep getting corrected on that recently.
Yeah.
Been a little scatterbrained.
One more thing, a-hole.
So that will be all for this week, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Stop, stop, stop. Stop, stop, stop. Stop, stop, stop. Bravery. Stop, stop, stop.